These are some of the stories that you need to know about today. Watch.
After consultation with the chapter, I've decided to strip the president of Ukraine of the Order of the White Eagle. God forbid they commit any aggression against Belarus. We don't want war. We're not planning to start fights with them. But if we see a threat to Belarus's very existence, then it's not just us that would act, but also Russia, because we have a treaty together, and it won't be pretty.
An unbelievable, beautiful 1,400-hectare private island in the middle of the Mediterranean.
Doesn't look so beautiful to me right now. Wow, Jay Bowes is going to be joining us to talk about this story. Also, a very prominent U.S. attorney who supported Donald Trump defended Wesley Snipes, defended Ralph Nader. Talk about a trifecta. He's going to join us as well. This is the Sanchez Effect, and let's do this. Hello again, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. Millions of you have been checking in both here and on our social platforms of late, and I can't thank you enough for wanting to know more and wanting to question more. So tonight, there is evidence that this rift between Poland and Ukraine is getting more serious. Poland has just announced that they're going to stop Ukraine from joining the EU. Block them, right? And for Volodymyr Zelensky, who sees himself as Europe's unofficial mascot, that's like a punch in the face to the mascot. Let me set this up for you so you can better understand how we even got to this place. So Poland is angry with Ukraine for honoring and celebrating Nazis. Nazis. Now, some of you might be asking, wait, but that's old news about Ukraine, isn't it? Didn't they know? Well, yes, it is. But Poland has never seemed to care. But now they do because of what Ukraine just did. In this case, celebrating or honoring Nazis affects them specifically. So here's the news that angered Poland. So Zelensky just renamed a Ukrainian military unit after a group of Nazi sympathizers. And you're going to see some of these old black and white videos, and they're horrific, right? But it was a horrific thing. These are horrible, horrible people who during World War II committed genocidal crimes. They were known as the UPA. They slaughtered 100,000 ethnic Poles during World War II. So what is Zelensky doing now? He's honoring them by naming a brand new military unit in Ukraine fighting the Russians as the same, right? So the Polish government hears about this and they're furious, as one might expect, right? They called what Zelensky did outrageous, right? They said that they're going to punish Zelensky. Right? And they have. They've stripped him of an award, in fact, that they gave him just a year ago. Here's their leader.
We did what we could to save our neighbors at this terrible moment. Poland provided unprecedented humanitarian, political, economic, and military assistance. The scale of the financial assistance we provided to fighting Ukraine amounts to billions of zlotys. The Polish military has trained thousands of Ukrainian soldiers. Today, we cannot remain indifferent to the fact that some of them will now serve under the banner of the UPA. This is unacceptable to us. Therefore, in light of President Vladimir Zelensky's consent to name one of the units of the armed forces of Ukraine after UPA heroes, after consultation with the chapter, I've decided to strip the president of Ukraine of the Order of the White Eagle.
Imagine naming a new group the UPA, naming them after Nazis that killed hundreds of thousands of people. Polish government officials followed that up, saying they're getting rid of the award they gave him last year by also announcing that they're also going to punish Zelensky and Ukraine even more by blocking their membership to the EU. So this rift is real. It's getting more real and more serious. But let's talk now about why it is that Poland is so important, right? So you ask yourself, what does Poland have to do with the war in Ukraine? Well, if you look at it geographically, it has everything to do with the war in Ukraine. Everything. And here's what you need to understand. 90% of all the military aid that goes into Ukraine comes through Poland. There it is. And this is the airport that they fly it into. I mean, this is what you need to understand. This is called Yeshiv Airport. Here it is in the southeastern portion of Poland. This is like a hub. This is like a primary gateway, if you will, where the vast majority of everything that comes to Ukraine that the Ukrainians then use to kill Russians with, this is where it comes from, right? This is where the Western arms and supplies that destined for Ukraine has flown in. And then, see this land corridor that we put together for you on this map? That's the land corridor. By the way, the Russians are watching this. They haven't hit it, but if they wanted to, they could. This is the land corridor right here that supplies all of that. Did you hear me say 90%? 90% of everything that comes in right through here. These weapons are then transported by trucks and by trains right through the Polish-Ukrainian border and into the theater, into the front. So what I'm saying by showing you this is that essentially without Poland, Ukraine would be in, really bad shape. If they weren't getting those 90%, they weren't getting that 90% of their weaponry, I mean, they're kind of reliant, right, on those shipments. So here's the question. Is there a chance that Poland could stop supporting Ukraine's war effort? They're going to stop them from joining EU. They're saying they're going to take away all their awards. They're criticizing the government. But will they go further and say, you know what, maybe we shouldn't give these guys all these weapons so that they can kill Russians? Are they going to do that? No, they're not. The short answer, no. Yet. No. Why? Hatred. Yeah. Just plain hatred. Poland, you see, like many European countries, has a visceral and mostly irrational hatred of Russians. And that hatred of Russians supersedes their hatred of Nazis. Think about that for a moment. Think about that. Let that sink in. Their hatred of Russians bests their hatred of Nazis. And it's because of that, unfortunately, that the war is the way it is. I want to talk about another of Ukraine's rifts now. Back in April, right, remember I traveled to Minsk to interview the president of Belarus. Beautiful, modern country. Boy, was I surprised. Really? Looks like a suburb in the United States. So Alexander Lukashenko, he's the president. And Mr. Lukashenko told me at the time that Mr. Zelensky is a pawn who's used by the West to try and hurt Russia. He said they tried to get him to do the same thing, but he didn't go along. And then he also told me that he's warned Zelensky and continues to warn Zelensky against carrying out aggressions against his people or his country. In fact, here's the clip of him saying so.
Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Poland, and to some extent Ukraine. God forbid they commit any aggression against Belarus. We don't want war. We're not planning to start fights with them. No wars will be launched from Belarusian territory against Poland or Lithuania. We have no intention of doing that unless we're dragged into a conflict and forced to respond. We don't want this, but if you do, if you choose that path, then we will defend ourselves with every means available. That doesn't mean that should a confrontation begin, we'd immediately use nuclear weapons against countries who attacked us or are used as a bridgehead to strike at us. We have enough conventional weapons to respond, but if we see a threat to Belarus's very existence, then it's not just us that would act, but also Russia, because we have a treaty together, and it won't be pretty. We will use everything we have.
It won't be pretty. We have a deal with Russia. We've got an agreement with Russia, a defense agreement with Russia. By the way, Foreign Minister Lavrov said the same thing today. Sergei Lavrov came out today and he said, look, if Zelensky attacks Belarus, we're going to have to go in there and defend Belarus. I mean, this is expansion of the war theater, isn't it? I mean, and this is a warning to Zelensky that was obviously, and this is why we're reporting this today. This is why I'm talking about this today. Because this warning you heard him issue to Zelensky when we were there talking to him, it has not been heeded by Zelensky. Zelensky is, in fact, now carrying out aggressions, to use Mr. Lukashenko's word, against Belarus. It first came in the form of a deadly bus attack, a bombing of a bus carrying Belarusian boys, soccer team. It was hit by a Ukrainian drone. In fact, we got the video. I think we showed it to you, but here it is again, just so you can see it yourself. It was reported that, you know, we reported it, but this story didn't reach people in the West because the Western media ignored it. They didn't think it was important that a bus was bombed 50 people were on board, 28 of them were children, a lot of them were injured. I think 7 were sent to the hospital, 1 person was killed. And it happened on the border between Russia and Belarus. Well, that didn't sit well with Mr. Lukashenko, who, by the way, also told me during our interview that, yeah, he says, I possess tactical nuclear weapons in Belarus. So where does this beef between Lukashenko and Zelensky stand right now? It's gotten worse, maybe even scary. And here's why. Let me tell you what just happened. In what seems like an incendiary or outsized threat from such a diminutive leader, Zelensky is threatening to attack Belarus. Yep. He's warning he's going to attack Belarus in 2 days. Because 5 days ago, he ordered a threat to Lukashenko, gave him a deadline of 7 days to dismantle and remove signal repeaters that are positioned near the Ukrainian border that are used by Russia's military. His threat to Lukashenko, he said, if he doesn't do it, in other words, if Lukashenko doesn't get rid of those repeaters, microwaves essentially, then he'll do it. He'll bomb them. Again, and we're not talking about weapons, right? We're talking about microwave antennas, like the one that you may have or I have in my backyard to watch TV. I mean, Zelensky's threatening to attack them, to attack the site where those things are, maybe kill people, blow them up. Lukashenko, for his part, has called for meetings with President Putin because of this. And again, let me just say, the deadline is what, 4 or 5 days away, depending on where you are? That he's going to attack Belarus? Has Zelensky gone utterly mad? Would he be willing to drag Belarus into a war with Ukraine? What is his endgame? And is NATO, is the EU, they support Zelensky 100%. Are they watching this? Are they going to say anything? Are they going to react? Are they ready to expand this war into Poland or Belarus for Zelensky and his whims? Now let's talk about Albania. This one seemed to come out of nowhere, man. It pits Trump's son-in-law, known for using his father-in-law's position to pull off shady deals, mostly with Persian Gulf countries that some have described as bribes or payoffs. This time, the deal appears to be with Albania? Yep. However, the people of Albania say, we will not have this. Watch. So you see that last video you were watching right there where they're taking those construction sheds and just throwing them over the side of the mountain, right? So the Albanians, protesters, that's the actual site where Jared Kushner wants to build a giant resort. So the Albanians were ripping down and destroying the construction shed, tearing them apart. That suddenly appeared, by the way, these construction sheds and these people working out there on this construction site. It just appeared like on a beach area without notice, right? In what is easily one of the most beautiful places on earth. We've got some of this video. Look at this. This is the coast off Albania where Jared Kushner and his wife Ivanka have announced that they're building a $1.4 billion luxury resort. I mean, it's a gorgeous place. But the people there who live in Albania, and they're like, what? Who? Why? Who approved this? Look at this protest. This is in the capital. They're massive, hundreds of thousands of people. And they've got those flamingos, because flamingos live in that area, by the way. There's beautiful pink flamingos. So the prime minister, Edi Rama, says he's going to go through with the plan, despite these hundreds of thousands of people saying, what the hell are you doing? What are you, giving our land away? Who's getting paid off, they're wondering. We don't know if anybody is, but it's a good question, no? Let's turn this into our Eye on Europe segment and bring in Che Bose. He's been looking at this. I got a gazillion questions. I don't know which one to start with. So let me just say, what the hell's going on here, man?
It's a really interesting one, Rick, right? Really interesting. Just after Donald Trump got elected this time round, It was announced that a company had been given special investor status, okay, which gives you kind of tax breaks and, you know, accelerated planning for this very sensitive place, right? It's a Sazan Island. As you see, it's just an incredibly beautiful place, very, very delicate and, you know, vulnerable place environmentally, like lots of turtles and beavers and beautiful, beautiful place, right? They got this planning, and it turned out that it was a company called Affinity Developments, okay? And guess who owns Affinity Developments?
Jared Kushner.
Correct. You keep getting these questions right every time I ask you. So Jared Kushner owns this place, right? And people start to prick up their ears. Now, why? Well, look, let's get something straight off the bat. There's one country in Europe, Rick, that has 70% Muslim population. Okay, and that's Albania. It's a small country, about 2.5 million people. And as you say, up to 250,000 at a time out on the streets. That's a massive lump of the population angry about this on the basis of environment. But there's also an undertone here about Mr. Kushner. You know, we all know who Jared Kushner is. He's very pro-Israeli. He's become the favorite boy in the White House ahead of his the big Don's own sons, you know, some people would say. But this is very, very controversial. Now, let's have a listen to him and Ivanka talking about how they managed to just stumble on this opportunity, Rick. You know, just walking down the street one day, you know, as you do, you know, out of the blue. The Prime Minister of Albania just came down to the boat one day. Next thing, I'm building a $1.5 billion resort slap bang in the middle of the most environmentally sensitive piece of real estate in Europe. Let's have a listen.
I'm all ears.
One of the nights there, Prime Minister Rama came to the boat. I had not met him when I was in government. But I was very, very impressed with his vision for what he wanted to do with Albania. We started looking at opportunities in the Balkans. And the partner who's leading that effort, I said, you know what, let's go down to Albania. I had such a good experience there. Go check it out, see if there's something there. And we were immediately drawn to where they were building an airport in Vlorë.
I'm working on an incredible project with my husband in the Mediterranean. It's massive in scale, an unbelievable, beautiful 1,400-hectare private island in the middle of the Mediterranean.
Let me just stop you real quick and just say, from an optics perspective, because this is what I do for a living, and I've worked in marketing and public relations in the past, this is so overdone. The soft lighting, the framing, the way it's written. I mean, this is
completely
total.
Accidental, though, Rick.
Yeah.
He just came down to the boat, right? You know that, right?
Overdone!
You know, and by the way, forget the fact that Albania is probably one of the most corrupt countries on earth, okay? Forget that, okay?
Okay. I'm not going to think about that.
Yeah. So, of course, this guy, Edi Rama, who's the prime minister of Albania, he came out and said something completely different to what Ivanka and Jared have said, right? Which almost make it kind of comedic in the denial that anything was going on. Suggesting that Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump were going to build anything there was all some sort of hybrid warfare against Albania, right? I'm serious. Let's have a listen to him from the man himself.
We can't discuss something that does not exist, but that is being presented in the overall the social media through a hybrid war against Albania, through false narratives like the project is not the project, but it's something cooked between me and Bibi Netanyahu through Jared Kushner to bring the Palestinians in Zvernets.
Yeah.
You know, so you can see the undertone here is one about conflict in the Middle East, because remember, as I say, 70% of the population in Albania are Muslim, okay? And they're very upset that Jared Kushner, who's very, very much a star of the Israeli establishment, is in their backyard now, literally building this huge Trump sort of resort. Now, there's one final bit here that's interesting. Albania wants to join the EU. It's not a member right now. And the EU is getting on board now, trying to prevent Trump from building this big resort. Because, of course, everybody knows it's the big Don behind this, probably, right? Jared's there at the front and his daughter. The EU are saying, you know, you've got to be very careful about the environment. There's special butterflies here. But in reality, Ursula and the people in Brussels aren't too happy about Mr. Trump, building this massive presence in Albania because it's a candidate country to join the EU. They want all the pudding for themselves, it seems.
And, you know, we should talk about this, though. There's nothing wrong with wanting to put up a beautiful resort that's going to end up hiring tens of thousands of people and could deliver to the country of Albania millions and tens of millions of dollars. The concept, the message itself, there's nothing wrong with it. It's the messenger. It's the way it was messaged that is the real screw up here. How can you go in there?
It all just happened on the boat, Rick.
But think about this. Does Jared Kushner not have a mirror? I mean, do these Zionists in many ways, I'm sorry, but it's just the truth. The other day, the Vice President of the United States said this. He told the Israelis, you're the most hated country on the planet. You have one ally, and it's us. Do they not see this?
If there was one country in Europe that you didn't want to do this in, would be the one where 70% of the population are Muslims.
So pay attention. That's like attacking a country that controls the Strait of Hormuz and then asking why they closed the Strait of Hormuz. I mean, are they stupid or are they just not paying attention? It's kind of crazy, but I'm so glad you brought us this. And yeah, that prime minister comes across like a mafia don. I don't know, just my take. I don't know. If I was making a movie, I would cast him.
Yeah. Well, look, this is by no means over. People are still on the streets. Huge mobilization here, and it just isn't going away. So it's a really interesting one for us to watch.
It's a great story, as usual. Che Bose, that's my man Che right there. Thank you, my friend. Appreciate it. Wow. Well, when we come back, we're going to be joined by Robert Barnes. Talk about another cool guy. He's a prominent attorney. He supported Donald Trump. But there's more. He defended Wesley Snipes. He defended Ralph Nader. How cool is that? Counselor Barnes joins us when we come back right here on The Sanchez Effect. It's going to be good. Welcome back. I'm Rick Sanchez. We are going to go right to Robert Barnes. He's good enough to join us now. He is a prominent attorney, and he is a supporter of Donald Trump. And then he defended Wesley Snipes as well. And my God, you know, this whole trifecta says something about you. Tell me what it says. Tell me what it says about you.
Well, the only consistency, as I like to say, with any of the clients or cases or causes that I've been involved in over about a quarter century is that they're all the underdog. So they don't share a political alignment. They don't share a political philosophy. They do share that when who they're up against is more powerful than they are. Even in the case of Donald Trump, he was up against the deep state in the 2020 election. Even in the case of Wesley Snipes, he was up against the IRS. So even when I'm representing people that may be of independent means, their adversary is much more powerful than they are. And I just enjoy those kind of underdog cases that have broader political consequence and policy consequence. And those are the kind of cases we like to take.
I love it. I love what you do as an attorney. I love what you do on your podcast. I love your general messaging because there's a problem with our country, Bob, our country, your country and mine. There's a serious problem right now where these unelected, nameless, faceless institutions, may or may not be the right word, are so powerful, they can take down anybody and own anybody. And it's happening before our very eyes, and it just pisses me off to no end. You're trying to stop it, right? Am I wrong? Is my description?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Rick. I mean, I think many people in 2024 in America believe that Donald Trump's election was going to resurrect the American Constitutional Republic just in time for our quarter century anniversary of the founding of this very young, relative historically, Constitutional Republic. And then, you know, the president kind of started to go off the rails beginning in the summer of 2025, but it accelerated during this whole Iran war. And now we're seeing a glimpse of an opportunity that he might come back. We get a resolution in the Iran war. Vice President Vance is doing good work. Maybe we get back to some level of detente with Russia. There's, you know, talk about that again. maybe we get back to the peace, prosperity, America first agenda, and not the donor-driven, co-opted agenda that has corrupted this administration and is corrosively putting the very foundations of our republic.
But they have so much money, Bob. I mean, the donors, the war machine people, the guys who make money off of these wars and the weapons, the people representing Israel who are all over the damn place with big, giant checks writing them to all kinds of people in Congress and all kinds of people in the Senate. How do we undo the force, the strength of all of that money? That's your job, dude, and good luck.
Yeah, it shows the nature of it, but we have to restore the republic by returning it to its roots, returning it to its origins. And that involves looking at how did our founders do it. I mean, I would say what our founding generation, that, you know, my family dates to that founding generation. We had, you know, I got ancestors. It was my great-great-great-granddaddy who said, don't shoot until you see the whites of their eyes on Bunker Hill. They faced far higher odds, far worse odds, far higher obstacles. Yeah. There had been no constitutional republic formed in that time period. They're up against the British Empire. So if they can do it, we can do it.
You know, this show is being seen right now. This interview that you and I are doing is being seen by tens of millions of people eventually, both on the socials, not to mention on the air, not to mention how much it's repeated all over the world, including so many people around Asia who are watching it. And a lot of them, as they're watching this conversation between these two Yankees, right, these two Americans, you and me, are thinking, you guys are so full of crap. You guys are a horrible country. You're going around the world, you're killing people, you're starting wars, you're doing it on purpose. Why are you doing that and then professing to us how great your principles are? It's not a bad question, is it?
Well, yeah, I understand that. The way I would put it is that's not the American people. That's the co-option of our constitutional republic by the deep state coup that established after World War II. You know, one of my great cousins going all the way back, John Quincy Adams, said, we do not go abroad searching for monsters to destroy. The debate recently between Mearsheimer and Pompeo and Walt and Newland pointed that out. And of course, Pompeo thought that the job was to go out and find monsters to destroy. Didn't realize the point of the debate is that we don't go looking for monsters to destroy. That's what America First was all about, restoring our constitutional republic, focusing here. We don't need this empire. Empires are enemies of constitutional republics, always and forever. And we need to remember that and restore that and use the debacle of the Iran war as a crash course for the new generations to figure that out.
Yeah. Are you serious? You are related to John Quincy Adams? Seriously?
Oh, yes, yes. He's my cousin on the, we go all the way back to a little bit after Plymouth Rock. So the Barneses go all the way back, causing trouble all the way along, by the way.
How cool is that? I mean, he was one of the greatest thinkers in the history of the American presidencies, right? I mean, am I wrong? I mean, everything I've read about him says he was so different from most of the other guys. He was actually an intellectual.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, part of reminding the American public and the American people what the Constitutional Republic is about, what it was started for, what it was established for, what it all means. We need to return to those principles and precepts.
You know, there are people out there now that are arguing this, you know, people like yourself, thank God. My friend Tucker, when we talk, this is some of the things that we talk about as well. And he's always, and I agree with him, pushing for, we need representation of the people again. I know it sounds simplistic, but that's really what it kind of comes down to. The people who we are electing no longer give a crap about our needs because they have more profitable needs, shall I say. That take care of, why would they take care of Rick Sanchez and his daughter Savannah or his kids Ricky, Robbie, and Remy or his granddaughter Serena when there's nothing from us to them? But if they help the guy who runs, Raytheon, that's different. So we've created a system where there's an incentive for them there, but none the other way. Right? I mean, that's part of the big part of our problem. How do we get back to that?
Well, we've got to get back to actual representative government, because what we have is a government of the Epstein class, by the Epstein class, for the Epstein class. These geriatric boomers who are taking us down this empire path of deep state corruption and coup of our constitutional republic. And we've got to restore the original principles and ideas and ideals of that constitutional republic. But in order for it to work, as you point out, means we need real representation, representation of voters' interests. My friend Thomas Massey was just derailed by the Israel lobby coming in and literally buying a house seat by mass lying to a bunch of boomer voters. That is corroding the very foundation of representative government. What happens when your representatives ain't representing you? This is what we get. But it's what we see across all of Western Europe. And I think what we'll see is the U.S. will probably go down a path similar to what Britain is experiencing. We usually parallel Britain, whether you're talking about Harold Wilson, comparable to Jimmy Carter, Margaret Thatcher, comparable to Ronald Reagan, John Major, comparable to Poppy Bush, Tony Blair, comparable to Bill Clinton, Brexit, comparable to Donald Trump. And what's happening in Britain? The major parties are going to be gone in 2-3 years, whatever the next election is. Starmer just went bye-bye. Yeah. The U.S., the Democratic and Republican Party can disappear overnight if they continue to quit representing the American people. And we're going to need new independent third-party movements, maybe a Massey-led movement, maybe a Tucker Carlson-led movement, maybe a Marjorie Taylor Greene-led movement. I've represented independent third parties to get ballot access for a quarter century. And that's what we've got to do, I think. And I think that's going to be the path unless the Republican or Democratic Party suddenly wakes up and decides to actually represent their voters.
Let's play that game. I like where you just went. I'm going to give you some names, and you tell me which one. Or actually, maybe we can even list them together. You ready? J.D. Vance.
Go ahead.
J.D. Vance, Marco Rubio, Candace Owens, Tucker Carlson, Thomas Massey. Put them in order.
Despite my friendship with Vice President Vance, I got to put Thomas Massey number one, because he is completely delivered. I've been friends with him for years. He's a leader in food freedom, medical freedom, political freedom, financial freedom, taking on the Fed, you name it. And he was willing to pay the price for his principles. He was willing to lose his power for his principles. Mm-hmm. And second on that list would be Vice President Vance. Narco Marco, I'm not such a fan of. People could just research Rubio, cocaine cowboys, figure that out for themselves.
Well, it's just because what it is? You're prejudiced against us Cubans from Miami. You just don't like us. That's what it is.
I've been accused of both being in the pocket of and the opponent of everybody. That's on the planet, pretty much.
No, I'm kidding. But continue your list. I love it. Keep going. You got Candace, you got Tucker, and who else did I say? I forgot. Marjorie Taylor Greene? I think so. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, Marjorie's great. She lives right across the border from me here in North Georgia. So she's fantastic, very principled person. Has proven it again, willing to sacrifice power for principle is the standard I'm using here to know whether or not we can trust them when they obtain power, if they do. Tucker's given up prosperity, given up money, given up access in order for his principles. And then of those that are inside the system currently, the only one I really trust is Vice President Vance. And what I would say is, for those out that are skeptics or critics of him, two things. One, without him, we would still be stuck in the Iran war. I have no doubt about that. I know what's been happening behind the scenes. People don't understand where Trump's mind is at or not at, unfortunately. And he's still young. He's young. Man, he's a millennial. Mm-hmm. You're talking about a guy who's been in politics since 2022. He's getting a crash course in the deep state, crash course in diplomacy, crash course in war, crash course in the donor class. So let's give him a little breathing room and hope he grows into the role.
Well, yeah, he does have that goofy perpetual smile, which sometimes makes me think he's not being honest. But my friend Tucker had a long conversation with me once, and he told me some things about him that were very impressive. He said he's actually one of the gutsiest people I've ever known, and he's true to his convictions, and he believes, Rick, in some of the most of the same things that you and I believe in about our country, Trucker alluded to the fact that he can't say the same things about President Trump. And this conversation was about a year and a half ago.
And Tucker was dead on accurate. JD, I'm a little biased because JD comes from my part of the country, from Appalachia. The long history of being anti-war, long history of being skeptical of those kind of interventions, long history of having populist independence, going back to the Scotch-Irish roots, taking on the British Empire even before they were here in America. So, and that's why I'm sympathetic with him. and I've seen his work. And look at what he's doing right now on Israel, as Dr. Parsi has been pointing out, who founded the Quincy Institute, named after my cousin John Quincy. Right. And for that, Barry Weiss went after him, and the Israel lobby went after him, trying to threaten to deport him with Narco Marco over there. But the Vance continues. He's saying, look, we've got to divorce from Israel. We've got to realign our relationship. Nobody's been willing to say that in America for 50 years.
I was talking to my son, Remy, the other day. He lives in Ohio and around Toledo, which means he lives in Detroit, for people who know the area. It's like back and forth. And he said, you know, Dad, I mean, I was on the golf course, and he was in, you know, when I was just, I spent an hour talking to him about everything. And my son is, I guess, I don't know, I'm horrible with my kids' ages because I overbred and I'm Catholic, but we have too many. But let's just say my son is in his mid to late 20s. And he said, you know, Dad, all this stuff that's going on, I don't know anybody of my generation who is buying into any of this. We all know it's bull crap. We are totally against Israel. We are totally against the war. We are totally against all of these decisions that suddenly Trump is making, which were the opposite of what he promised. He said, and you have no idea how strong that conviction is amongst people of my generation, and I mean 30 and below. I think he's right. I mean, I think we see these elections in the United States, and you talked about this earlier, where these boomers, you know, guys like you and I, go out and vote, and because people like you and me, not you and me, but people like you and me, sit around watching CNN, Fox News, Newsmax, and MSNBC, or whatever the hell they're called, and it's crap, it's poison, so that they vote in accordance to what that state TV convinces them to do. But just beneath a layer of those people is a revolution coming. Is it?
Yeah, I mean, you see in the information space. That, for example, and no better distillation of that than the Thomas Massey race. So in Thomas Massey's race, it really wasn't even generational. It was generational on the surface, but not if you looked underneath. Uh-huh. If you looked underneath, the key was their information source. So if a voter relied on Fox News or cable news in general, or local newspapers, or institutional newspapers, or the local TV news, then they were voting overwhelmingly against Massey. Everybody else was voting overwhelmingly for Massey. And it just happened to be the nature of that primary, being a close primary, et cetera, that older group that's disproportionately older, but it's their news source that's the problem. Right. And the new voters, they aren't listening to CNN. They ain't listening to Fox News. I mean, I get it. God bless Donald Trump. He wakes up, he listens to Fox News, goes to sleep, listens to Fox News. That's 90% of our problems with Trump. But if you listen to independent news, look at J.D. Vance, his primary source, are independent podcasters. When he goes out there to pitch the Iran deal, he's targeting podcasters. He understands that's the future. And that future is going to break with the established, controlled, gatekeep narrative that the big corporations and the deep state have been able to institute in America. That day is dying and fading in live time. And the future is with independent media like you, like podcasters, like others in that space. And they're going to, and that space is moving in a radically different direction than the old post-World War II neoliberal world order that tried to convert our constitutional republic into a corrupted empire. And once we are able to kill that empire, dead once and for all, like a bad vampire, that's when we can restore life to the republic again.
Say hallelujah. Thank God. Let's hope so. I mean, I think it's really important. Hey, let me ask you about something that just came to my mind. The other day I was watching Trump, and he was doing, he was having his news conference in, I think he was in Switzerland, right? He was in Switzerland. And this is when he started blasting, announcing what he was going to do, pitching his deal with Iran. And he was really critical of Bibi Netanyahu and Israel for bombing Beirut and for continuing to threaten to hit southern Lebanon. And he was saying all of these things, and I thought, wow, this is so cool. You go, Don. I mean, you know, it was pennies from heaven. And who was over his right shoulder? It was Marco Rubio. And I've never seen Marco so, his lips were tight. He looked angry. I don't think our producers could find that video. I should have asked them to share it. But you could see he's back there, and he's like, You know, like somebody who can't say what they're thinking, but everything about his face looked like he was so damn angry. And it made me think of this. Marco lost That moment told me Marco lost. Marco was, let's continue the war, everything for Israel. And the guy you said you like, Vance, is, no, let's not continue to back Israel and let's get the hell out of this war. And in that picture, I was saying, Vance won. Is that right?
That's exactly what happened. Narco Marco could count the Israel lobby checks to put him in the White House in 2028 up until about 2 weeks ago. Same with Soros Scott.
Stop for a moment and say that again. He would say, give me that last line you just repeated again, because it's so on point. Go ahead.
Sure. Basically, Narco Marco was ready to cash the checks from the Israel lobby to elect him to 2028. He could smell the curtains up in Trump's offices up there above the executive office. He was ready to roll. And just as of 2 weeks ago, and all that got rug pulled from him. Same with Soros Scotty, who could count his blessings as he was going forward, because he was part of this sort of war machine empire approach. The same with John Ratcliffe, the CIA, who thought he had finally prevailed. Joe Kent was gone. Tulsi Gabbard was gone. Amaryllis Fox was gone. He was going to be on top. And to the credit of Vice President Vance, who Trump himself had rug pulled six different times on the Iran deal. Vance will get a deal done, rug pull it. And credit to the Iranians. The Iranians play Trump better than Trump plays Trump. Trump, during the 2016 campaign, anybody criticized the wall, he'd say it just got 2 feet higher. Well, every time Trump rug pulled a deal with Iran, Iran said, well, it just got $10 billion higher. That's why Vance had to keep increasing how much we had to give to try to put the same deal back on the table that Trump had rug pulled.
Yeah.
But there's no question it was a huge internal victory for Vance against all odds to get us out of this war. And he was just able to find enough of the old Trump to do it, because otherwise he was going to take us right off the economic precipice of global economic collapse and political implosion for Vance's own political future. So smart advance, good advance, good for the world that he continues to be able to get us out of this war. But he's the only conscientious one left in that part of the national security establishment. Other than people like Albert Colby, who's really good. You remember his grandfather, the family jewels of the CIA back in the day. And his grandfather, fell off a boat. So Albert hasn't forgotten. And that's who Israel was spying on. His deputy is a great guy I've known for many years.
They killed him. They killed Colby. The Israelis killed Colby.
I mean, there's many reasons to suspect as much. And Elbridge is the one who wrote the national security statement and the national defense strategy, which said what? We're not going to do any more regime change wars. We're going to stop being this big global empire. And then the Israel lobby hijacks the administration and Vance goes on Bibi's train. And Trump Trump figured out at the very end, Bibi's train is going off the cliff.
Yes.
And the only question is, do you want to go off the cliff with him? Or do you want to let Vance grab him off before before Bibi hops off? Because I don't think Bibi's going to survive in a couple of months. I think his future is not the Israeli Hall of Fame. It's going to be in an Israeli prison. He can join the Palestinians they've locked up there.
This is really interesting, and I don't want to, overplay this thing, but I do have one final question, because it is curious, and I think to me and to most people who are watching, that J.D. Vance was kind of not in the picture. The guy was going around doing what vice presidents do, giving awards to kids in schools and stuff like that, and bad speeches. And then all of a sudden, he's front and center. This is the guy who's leading the charge, who's flying to Switzerland, who's meeting with the with the Iranians. And unfortunately, he's got dead weight in Witkoff and Kushner with him. But nonetheless, he's there all of a sudden. So what you're telling us is he worked that to make it happen. He wasn't anointed as the new guy to get us out of this mess. He worked that. He made it happen. That's what you and your sources tell you?
Oh, absolutely. Without J.D. Vance, we would still be in a kinetic conflict with Iran. That's how bad it was.
Really?
He was the one who got the deal back in early April to get us out. He continued to navigate, negotiate. His entire staff and team has been dedicated to this nonstop. He understood the economic collapse would be a disaster for the world, independent of all the other geopolitical analysis. And he kept his nose to the grindstone all the way through, despite hit pieces from the Murdoch media machine. And remember the Daily Mail piece that said everybody hates Vance inside the White House, and the New York Post piece, how Trump makes fun of him because he dropped the football championship trophy, all that jazz. He ignored all of it, ignored all the noise, all the internal efforts to stab him in the back while he did this, in order to push, get as best a deal as could be done that he could get Trump to sign on. And Trump kept rug pulling, panicking. Trump would get to it, say, "I agree, JD, let's do the deal." Then he would watch Fox News and he'd be like, "Oh, no, this is trouble. They're going to portray me badly," and would rug pull it. And Vance wouldn't let that deter him. He would just go back. The Iranians kept increasing the price. But he was like, whatever it takes to get out of this. Without J.D. Vance, we're still in this war. And that alone makes his vice presidency worthwhile. The mere fact he was able to get us to a place where we could end this war before the whole world's economy collapses makes his choice as vice president one of the best choices for vice president that's ever been made.
You make a good case for this. Wow, Bob, thank you. Very well done. Let's move on to news now and stop talking about our internal stuff in the United States. Where shall we start? We have already kind of talked enough about Iran, so I'm going to take you to Ukraine. Did you see what happened recently with Zelensky? Interestingly enough, J.D. Vance would tell you, Tucker Carlson would tell you, this guy's not even elected, right? I mean, he decided to stay in office past the election. And now he's got serious problems with Poland and Belarus. And the stuff he's saying and the threats he's making are kind of crazy, almost like he's trying to expand the war from Russia to those countries as well. What is your take on this guy? What is your take on the situation in Ukraine?
Well, you know, that goes all the way back. I mean, basically, you can really go back to the 1700s, 1800s. You can go back before that if you take the whole Putin history lesson course that he gave Tucker. That there's always been an effort in the West to undermine Russia using Ukraine, which were, you know, the old language just means the borderlands, literally the borderlands. But if you accelerate to the modern era, post-World War II, Operation Gladio, we used the Banderites to try to continue to undermine the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union didn't forget about Mr. Stepan Bander, you know, caught up with him there in Germany a few years later. But that didn't stop the movement or its ideas from growing. Then you combine that with George Soros and the deep state after the collapse of the Soviet Union, and you've got a whole different scale of Ukraine being a testing ground for, as Tulsi Gabbard just documented, illicit biolab research, a massive human trafficking that's going on, the money laundering that's going on, arms running that's going on, and essentially the criminal gangs kind of take over Ukraine after that elevated to the Maidan coup, where they take these hooligan bands and say, you know, wouldn't you like to be a Nazi Banderite? And, you know, give your, I mean, a lot of these guys were just soccer hooligans, just had an excuse to beat up people. Yeah. And they were just given a different excuse. I always call it a political permission slip for sociopaths and psychopaths to act out their violent fantasies, just in the name of race or religion or politics or something else. But really, these are just sick people that somebody in power is arming and enabling. And they were able to use that to seize control of the government. And Russia, I think what Putin would regret now, was unusually patient, really, for a decade. Now, you could argue that Putin was wisely understanding the economic war that was going to be forthcoming and needed to realign Russia's economy so that it could withstand that economic war before he could militarily go into Ukraine. But there's no question. I mean, these are some of the, you know, 10, 20 years from now, when the history books are written, anybody who is attached or associated with Zelensky is going to look like a fool and an idiot, and they're going to be embarrassed by it in history's annals. I mean, it's so bad. Rowan Atkinson, Mr. Bean, is threatening to sue Soros' Scotty Bessent for comparing Zelensky to Mr. Bean. He called him a coked up Mr. Bean. And Rowan Atkinson said, "I'm nothing like Zelensky. This guy's a total bum." So maybe he tries to walk like me. But that gives you an idea what a joke Zelensky really is. Vance understands that. Trump sporadically understands that. The West pretends otherwise. One day he's Churchill, the next day he's Lincoln. In their comparisons, the guy is a disgrace. The country is falling apart. What's the Ukrainian people want peace. Those that are still living there, most have fled.
Yeah.
It makes no sense. I was telling somebody the other day, how in the world did people come up in the West, in Europe and the States, with the idea of, let's try to take on the Russian bear, the Persian tiger, and maybe the Chinese panda, all three.
Yeah.
The three longest lasting civilizations in human history. Those are the ones we're going to try to take on, these little newcomers in the West, relatively speaking. This shows historical amnesia of incredible scale. I know Vance has worked hard behind the scenes to try to get the deal done that Trump agreed to in August, which was basically what Putin laid out in summer of 2024, But Trump gets blowback from our loser idiots in the Senate. Our Senate's like the old Roman Senate, you know, when it became post-Republic Senate. Well, you know, when it was all just a bunch of corrupt hacks who couldn't wait to, you know, get a new slave or a new piece of the empire disguised as a functioning republic when it no longer was. That's what our senators are. When you see these geriatric lunatics running around screaming more war for Israel or more war against Russia or more war against China or more war somewhere else or empire or somewhere else. Let's go in and topple Cuba. Let's go in and topple Venezuela. These people have lost their minds and lost their script.
Why does Trump care about them? Who gives a crap about what these 90-year-old men and women in the Senate think because they're getting money? I mean, they make 100 and what is it? What do they make? $200,000 a year, something like that? What is their salary of a senator?
Well, that's the official pay. The unofficial pay. It's much better.
They're all multimillionaires. They're all multimillionaires, but they only make $200,000 a year. How the hell does that add up? And why isn't Anderson Cooper talking about that ever? Right?
Oh, I mean, it's incredible. I mean, credit to Congresswoman Luna and others for trying to stop all the insider trading that's going on a regular basis. You see who our Congress really is. When they really get enraged when somebody proposes to take away their piggy bank of insider trading. That's the kind of thing that really motivates them.
Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, I think the Iranians are correct, as you know, Larry Johnson and I and some others have talked about. And I heard from people inside the White House that the president's mental behavioral state is not the same as it used to be.
Yeah.
I think we increasingly in America need to start thinking about age, automatic retirement requirements, even for the president. You know, this happened with Reagan at the end of his term, obviously happened with Biden. That once they hit 78, 79, 80, there's a higher disproportionate risk of not having their full cognitive capacities. With Trump, it's not his cognitive capacity, it's behavioral capacity. So what was described to me is basically what's called prefrontal lobe or early stage dementia, where your behavioral decision-making collapses. And about 6 months ago, to your point, Trump used to never care about a bunch of old geriatric neocon senators thing. He used to make fun of them all the time.
Yes.
He suddenly became attached with this idea with Lindsey Graham whispering in his ear every night. Laura Loomer, he talks to Laura Loomer regularly. Which is insane. Miss Jigsaw Puzzle herself. He became, I'm going to be an emperor. I'm going to be like the great elector. He's doing those Roman emperor memes. He thinks he picked the Pope and he thinks he's going to pick the next supreme leader. All that stuff. Venezuela's going to put statues of me up in gold. And he's building 50-foot statues in his new library to himself. You know, it's like, what in the world? He just kind of started to lose it, and he's not the same guy. And he has, and Rand figured this out to their credit, because they started putting in a bunch of shrinks and say, let's filter Trump through a psychological filter. And what does that tell us? And then they learned how to communicate to him. And he operates with almost like a toddler's mindset. I think Russia and Putin have kind of figured this out. I mean, after the attempted assassination on Putin, figured out this isn't the old Trump. And we're going to have to navigate carefully around with somebody that's basically, you have someone with the psychology of a two-year-old, my little two-year-old grandson. I was watching this, I'm like, holy crap, this is Trump now. And that's basically what we got in the White House.
Yeah.
And that's why what makes Vance's achievements even more remarkable if people knew behind the scenes what he was dealing with.
You know where I got a sense that you're right about what the Russians realized? And you know when they realized it? I was having a conversation with Sergei Lavrov, and he told me, he said, Rick, you know, Alaska was the message to us. It was horrible. We literally had a handshake. We had the man shake our hand and say, we've got a deal. We were, he didn't say this because Russians don't use the word giddy. That's the kind of word you and I would use. But, you know, the Russians were pretty satisfied with the meetings in Alaska. And they came away from there thinking, we're going to make this happen. This war is going to be coming to an end, and we're going to get what we want, and we're going to have to give Ukraine what they want, but we're ready to do this. The next day, they get a phone call. What deal? What? Did we agree to something? It's like, oh, no. I mean, and that's kind of where the realization was for the Russians that it ain't a full deck that we're negotiating with. So what do we do now? I thought I'd share that little insight with you because, you know, you were onto it. I mean, you know, it's kind of where we are now.
It was people that worked with Trump for a long time. Back to the first administration, who told me about this when I was up in D.C. in January. And I was like, oh, man, this is not good. What you're describing. I described it to some other people. And people like Larry was like, well, that's what happened with my mother. the, you know, the, she started, like, she was always really super polite.
Hell, I feel it. When I hit 60, I started forgetting things. So get out of here. I mean, I'm like, you don't need.
Well, your social filter disappears. That's why you're seeing crazy truth posts all the time. That's why Vance has been trying to get the Iranians to understand. He's like, just please, for the love of God, ignore anything Trump says. Just ignore it. Yeah. Just ignore it. We can get the deal done. We can get him to sign stuff. Just please ignore the crazy old man in the White House.
That's, boy, what great insight. Bob, you're fantastic. Let's stay in touch, you and I, okay?
Absolutely. Glad to hear it.
What's the name of the podcast? People want to listen to you. People want to hear you more. They're going to want to hear you after this interview. So where do they go?
All of that is at vivabarneslaw.locals.com.
Viva la revolución. Perfecto. Muchas gracias. Excelente. And it's really been a pleasure talking to you. Thanks, my friend.
Thanks, Rich.
So, wow. Did you like that as much as I did? Because I really enjoyed that conversation. The only reason I stopped the interview is because Boris is telling me that we're out of time and that apparently they got to do another show or something. Because I could go all day. I love talking to really smart people with historical references, connections, something to say. Depth. God, I miss that. We need more people like this guy, Robert Barnes. Hey, by the way, thanks so much for being with us. I know you're watching us on X. I know you're on Spotify. And you're now on YouTube watching us, even though YouTube tried to shut me down. But there's a new campaign coming for BitChute. So I want you to check out BitChute. I'm going to be telling you more about it very soon. In the meantime, thanks for being with us. Thanks for letting us into your homes. And we'll be looking for you next time.